insubstantial, but it's the reality that we deal with, ignorance. And asmita is the second one, false ego, it's very specific, bodily identification. Then raga and dvesha. So these are found in Bhagavad Gita also. Raga dvesha samuttena dvandva mohina bharata. Attraction and repulsion. Attachment. Attachment for material happiness, which brings us something other than material happiness. But our attachment to strive for material happiness, despite all odds, and all of our experience in good sense and all of history, still we strive for it in a very attached way. And dvesha, hatred of unhappiness or the cause for that unhappiness. And often this dvesha leads to some impersonal or nihilistic philosophy of life. And abhinivesh, it's the way that it's presented here is in the book, acquired nature. And this abhinivesh, it means a very general and deep tendency to be involved in material existence. Say the difference between raga is a particular attraction for a particular object or particular method of enjoying. And abhinivesh is far more pervasive, just being absorbed in material existence, being a conditioned soul, going for it, just in a general way, abhinivesh. So the details of this are not essential. It's there because our acharyas have given it. But it gives some idea. There are some conditions of heart that are blocking our progress towards Krishna that's coming out of our past sinful activities. And the next one that he describes is anarthas arising from previous pious activities. That's a little more difficult to understand. Something that's unwanted that arises out of past pious activities. But the explanation is not so difficult. Due to past pious activities, just like, say, residents on the heavenly planets, due to so many previous pious activities, a soul may attain the heavenly planets. And in that position of being on the heavenly planets, the rewards for those pious activities are so abundant and practically intoxicating that one can easily forget the spiritual purpose of life and become preoccupied with just enjoying the fruits of one's past pious activities, or enjoying in the quality of goodness. Or another is becoming attracted to impersonal liberation. Not so much struggling with the problems of past sins, but becoming distracted by one's past pious activities. So that's the second category. So anarthas arising from past sins, anarthas arising from past pious activities. A third is anarthas that arise from imperfectly performed bhakti. And specifically, there's a note in what I've handed out. This is something different than offenses in devotional service, seva aparad. Let's say some offense that one may make in the process of deity worship, even perhaps unknowingly. In nectar devotion, there are 64 items of proper performance of deity worship and things to be avoided when coming before the deity, whether it's the pujari or someone who is taking part in worship of the deity. So it's not from that category, seva parad, because it's explained that from the next item, that is, anarthas arising from offenses, that's the offenses that may be performed when you engage in devotional service or when you engage in worship of the deity. But rather this imperfectly performed devotional service, just read from what it says here, along with main creeper of bhakti, as you're engaged in devotional service, some weeds may also grow. Such as the acquisition of material wealth or other facilities, so that the Sanskrit is labha, or worship and respect, puja, or a comfortable position, fame, etc., pratishtha. So these three. So one is engaged in, so go back, if by taking up bhajana kriya, devotional activity, someone is trying to engage in devotional service nicely. In the course of that rendering of their devotional service, they may in fact do it very nicely. And the result of doing it very nicely, there may be some recognition that comes to that person for doing that service very nicely. And if the devotee thinks, yes, it's very good that everyone has recognized the nice way that I've been taking care of Radha Damodar, or the nice way that I'm taking care of the cows, or the nice way, whatever the service is that I do. At last, somebody, there's an intelligent person around here that can understand really what my worth is. So, becoming the enjoyer of that recognition, or the enjoyer of some post, someone is given some title. You're in charge of the pots. Anyway, someone gets some recognition, some particular title or position or situation from which they can render their service. And one may become attached to that more so than the purpose of devotional service itself. Or wealth. Some contribution may be given in appreciation for the service that's being performed, and so that service can go on very nicely. And someone may think, well, very good, thank you so much. And that's wrong. It's not unto oneself that title or contribution or appreciation should go. It's to the mercy of the devotees and the mercy of the spiritual master and the merciful process of bhakti itself. So one's attention should go there. But if one isn't transparent or pure, then it can make one puffed up and proud, which is something unwanted for one who's on the path of devotions. And then the fourth category is anarthas that arise from offenses. And you can see here there's the list of the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name. The explanation given is that if there are anarthas that are in the heart due to past sins or due to past pious activities or to some mistake that one may unintentionally, mistakenly have performed in devotional service, those can be very quickly dismissed or eradicated by the chanting of the holy name. Chanting of the holy name is so powerful. However, if one makes offenses against the chanting of the holy name, then there's another category of anarthas that arise in the heart. And that's what this one is. Anarthas that arise due to offenses against the holy name. So I don't think I'll take the time to review this. For some of the persons here, it may be, maybe you've not heard so much about this, but for many of the devotees, it's a very, very primary thing. Prabhupada instructed. I remember when this instruction came, it was during the lecture. Prabhupada was speaking about the importance of chanting Krishna's holy name without offense, and that he explained that without clearing offenses in the course of chanting, one will not reach the goal. That is, one will be blocked. There will be something unwanted in the way of our reaching the goal of awakening our love for Krishna. That's the anartha that will appear in the heart coming from chanting with offense. So he instituted that in all of our temples, all over ISKCON, in the morning we should recite the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name, and that we should carefully guard against these 10 offenses. So I'm not going to read all the notes that are here. You can take these with you. But there's a particular point that I wanted to make. It's on page 2, and it's about a quarter of the way down. In dark print is the removal of anarthas, and the second paragraph. I'm going to read the paragraph and explain it. In the case of anarthas arising from nam aparad, the rate of nullification is as follows. On the level of bhajana kriya, the eradication is limited. On nishta, so those of you that don't know, this nishta means on the other side of anartha nivritti. When you've gone beyond the eradication of unwanted things in the heart, still, the eradication of that anartha that has come out of offenses from chanting, it's pervasive, just one step beyond limited. On the level of bhava, the eradication is general. At prema, the eradication is complete, and with the attainment of the Lord's lotus feet, the eradication is absolute. I'll translate that. It is, the meaning is that it is so important for devotees who are taking to the chanting of Krishna's holy name as our means of purification that we very carefully guard against offenses. Because the anarthas in the heart that arise due to chanting with offense, very difficult to eradicate. Even in the nishta stage, even in the bhava stage, even in the prema stage, it's not according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's still not absolute. And this is a nice explanation for those of you that may sometimes be asked this question: how is it possible that a great personality like Bharat Maharaj, who according to Srimad Bhagavatam had attained the stage of bhava, that he fell from the stage of bhava, he even stopped his devotional practices, and he became a deer, and in his life following that he became Jad Bharat. How is that someone who is at such a high level, bhava stage, bhava bhakti, can fall from that platform of bhava bhakti? Here's the answer. Where there is nam aparad, at the stage of bhava, the eradication is general, and then complete, and then absolute. There's still residual traces of anarthas. It's a stain that doesn't readily go away. So the performers of devotional service, the chanters of Hare Krishna mantra, should be very, very conscientious to carefully guard against the offenses in the chanting of the holy name, so as to avoid anarthas and eradicate those anarthas that may be still in the heart. So, hey, you've got a new clock. And it tells the right time. It's great. Starting on page 2, halfway down, there's two other descriptions of anarthas. So what we just covered is the chapter from Madhurya Kandambani that discusses anartha nivritti. And there, in the preceding chapter, it describes unsteady devotional service. Is anybody here that's a little bit familiar with what unsteady devotional service feels like? Unsteady devotional service. Unsteady. The cause of that unsteadiness is anarthas. Because what's on the other side of anartha nivritti is steady. Nishtha. Steady devotional service. It's like Prabhupada's term, fixed up. It's a phrase that he coined very, very early in our Krishna consciousness movement, where he described a certain devotee or certain devotees as being fixed up devotees. So it was like, I remember that, it was like a phrase, it was like one of his ISKCON jargons. That devotee's fixed up. Literally it would mean that they're in the stage of steady devotional service, nishtha. There's no interruptions or unsteadiness in their devotional service. So in this second half of page 2, it describes a progression of unsteadiness towards steadiness, or a gradual, it's more speaking about the performance of devotional service itself, and specifically it's speaking about the determination. I'm going to read some quotes tomorrow where Prabhupada is speaking specifically about how important determination is to successfully perform devotional service. You cannot successfully perform devotional service without determination. So here there's different kind of even humorous manifestations of determination in devotional service. Different unsteady kinds of determination in devotional service. So we'll go through them. And the first one is utsaha mayi. So utsaha, we know this word from Nectar of Instruction. Utsahan nishchayat dhyayat tat tat karma pravartana. There are six symptoms or six features that help one become successful in devotional service. So enthusiasm, utsahan mayi, means illusory. Utsahan mayi, false or illusory enthusiasm. So we find this utsaha mayi in very, very, not only in this particular position, but sometimes we find it in the very, very beginning of devotional service. One who's just beginning devotional service thinks, I've got it. I've got it down. Devotional service, kijai. And what the classic comparison that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives is the young schoolboy who first gets his books in school and he thinks, I've mastered everything, what's next? So obviously he's not mastered everything, he's just a beginning schoolboy, but he's thinking like that. Piece of cake. Give me something, give me some challenge. Utsaha mayi. Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, just to give an illustration of this, was telling me of something that he experienced in England that illustrated this. The example he gave was, once George Harrison who had donated the Bhaktivedanta matter, the whole estate, to become an ISKCON temple, was visiting the Bhaktivedanta matter. So he donated the place, and the deities were installed with a grand festival, and Prabhupada was still there, and you know, there was gobs and thousands of the hundred, whatever, so many devotees. And then George Harrison agreed to pay a visit to the Bhaktivedanta manor. And so there was one very new bhakta who, when George Harrison was coming, you know, got out of his limousine and was heading towards the Bhaktivedanta manor, he ran up and dove in front of him right into a puddle, paying his obeisances. He got up and he's dripping with muddy garments. Hari Bol! So there's an example of Utsaha Mai. Very enthusiastic. A little foolish, but very enthusiastic. So, then the next that he identifies is Gana Tarala, which literally means thick and thin, or condensed and dilute. So where one's enthusiasm or determination is sporadic, sometimes very, very enthusiastic, and then in the next moment, Shishi Radha Damodar Ki. In the next moment, one can become very discouraged, and then somehow pick up and become very enthusiastic again. And then, so thick and thin, determined, very lost, like that, vacillating in that way, in determination. Then the third one. So these are progressive, one following the next. Vyudha Vikalpa. The next one is very unstable in terms of one's decision about a course of action in devotional service. And it's very funny the way that Vishwanath Chakravarti is back and forth. So before that, the deity is taken there, Lord Chaitanya, with his associates, and to this day it's performed this way. They cleanse the Gundija temple. And the purport that I wanted to read describes the significance of the cleansing of the temple. So the temple signifies one's heart, or the place where Krishna resides. In this region here, not just in the heart muscle, but in the region of the heart. Literally, the Supreme Lord resides there, and he rules, just like the deity is on the altar, and Radha Damodar presides over the whole dham. Although he's seated in one place, he's the proprietor and the predominating deity of the whole place. But there is a place where he sits, and that's there, it's on the altar. So cleansing of the Gundija altar, or the altar within the temple, we'll see, it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is being quoted by Srila Prabhupada here as explaining that significance. How do we make the heart ready for the Lord to come and reside there? The Prabhupada in the purport quotes this verse. Engage in the activities that cleanse the heart. And specifically, in the last line, surit means benefactor. So how do we use this term in the English language, benefactor? Say someone wants to build a temple, just like the devotees here would like to make a new altar. new place for Radha Damodar in the temple next door. So someone who makes that arrangement, say financially, that would be the benefactor. Or it was someone makes a will, so that there's the recipient of the will and there's the benefactor. I will my life savings to start a hospital. So that's the benefactor. So Krishna is the benefactor in the process of hearing and chanting. We're engaged in hearing and chanting, but it's not us who are doing the cleansing of the heart. It's Krishna. He's the benefactor. It's his message. It's his representative who he has instructed to give his message and guide others in that process. And they engage in that process. And Krishna, as the benefactor, vidhu noti surit satam. He does the cleansing. And he specifically, the effectiveness of that cleansing is for those who are satam. What does satam mean? Those who are truthful. Literally, that sat. Those who are attached to sat. Is that truthful? There's no duplicity. There's no other purpose than the intended purpose, cleansing the heart. So the problem for us, most of us, is that we have other motives besides one motive. And they're just conditioned, they're just baggage that we carry along with us from living so long in the material world, and we're just accustomed to our baggage and we don't even notice it. Just part of us. Our other motivations, our other agendas and games and, you know, stuff. Material baggage. And so this anartha nivritti is getting rid of that stuff. That's what anartha nivritti is. Getting rid of our dull-headed material conditioning, where we just plod along like every other donkey on the path and just go chasing after the carrot or whatever mindless activities we normally engage in, but kind of incorporate a little devotional service because that's good too. There's something we pick up along the way. So to get beyond that kind of mindless performance of devotional activity, this anartha nivritti stage is essential. Cleansing the heart consciously. So there's something I mentioned, Krishna is the benefactor, he does the cleansing. But we do the work, and he does the cleansing. For him, the cleansing is effortless. For us, we have to make some effort. The focus on anartha nivritti, at least the topic that we're going to discuss this morning, we are discussing, is the effort that we must make, while at the same time recognizing it's not our effort. But in recognition of our effort, Krishna smiles. And he assists us, or he empowers that effort to be effective. He does the cleansing, and we're making the effort. So along with our hearing and chanting, we have to make effort to remove from our heart unwanted things, abhadras. And so the general description of that they all fit under is an inordinate desire to enjoy matter. So I'm going to read from the purport. So that if you want to look this up later, it's in Madhyavibha chapter 12. It comes just before the Ratha Yatra pastime. If the devotee at all wants to cleanse his heart, he must chant and hear the glories of the Lord. Sri Krishna. Srinvatasva Katha Krishna. This is a simple process. Krishna himself will help cleanse the heart because he is already seated there. Krishna wants to continue living within the heart. And the Lord wants to give directions. But one has to keep his heart as clean as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept the Gundicha temple. The devotee therefore has to cleanse his heart, just as the Lord cleansed the Gundicha temple. In this way, one can be pure, one can be pacified and enriched in devotional service. But these are just, they're well-placed words. Pacified, he explains later, it means the mind. When the mind, instead of roaring or crying or complaining or doing these other things, becomes transparent and pure and in its natural state, peaceful, pacified. And enriched means that the qualities of a devotee, the qualities of the soul, start to show themselves. They awaken and unfold. And life in devotion becomes enriched by them. Don't we wish, huh? If the heart is filled with straw, grains of sand, weeds, or dust, or, in other words, anyabhilashita punyam, or purnam, excuse me, purnam. This is a reverse of anyabhilashita shunyam from Rupa Goswami. Anyabhilashita purnam means filled with all kinds of other desires. If the heart is filled like that, one cannot enthrone the Supreme Personality of Godhead there. The heart must be cleansed of all material motives brought about through fruitive work, speculative knowledge, mystic yoga system, and so many other forms of so-called meditation. So, the part that follows, Prabhupada speaks of two different things. One is motive, and the other is activity. So, just summarizing, because of time, we don't. It's part of what we have to do is to mold our activities in such a way that they're complementary to, or they're following the path of devotion. And then those activities also we have to do a little check and cleansing on the motivations for those activities. Because if we don't, chances are the motivations for our activities will continue to be the same motivations as we had with material activities, at least to some degree. And therefore this nartanavritti means we have to cleanse away ulterior motives. And what does that cleansing of ulterior motives means? One should not attempt material upliftment. Understanding, all these activities are against the natural growth of spontaneous love of Godhead. So, material upliftment. So there's some obvious material upliftments that are mentioned here. So one category of material upliftment is just seeking, in the language that Prabhupada has used, is inordinate economic development, or accumulating wealth more than one needs to do. And that's just a residual tendency. I mean, that's it, the beginning and end for materialists. One thing, they're fixed. Money. Money is the honey. Whenever I was just visiting somebody's home, an Indian family, and said, it's not the craze anymore for parents to push their kids in India to become doctors. Now it's computer science. He said, yeah, I heard the same one myself. It's much easier to become a multimillionaire than a millionaire through computing if you can, you know, develop your... And the whole, you all know all this stuff. Money. Be pious, that's okay, but don't lose sight of number one. Money. Economic development. Pious economic. So, that very strong, compelling force, not only from one sector of the world, but all over the world, wealth. Taking up devotional service, and so economic development isn't bad. In fact, it must be there. It must be there. Neglecting it is another disturbance. Ask any householders. If it's not there, it's a big disturbance. So something must be there. But to go for it as a goal, especially, you know, piggyback your devotional service with economic development. It'll help enrich your ability to be successful in economic development. Good deal. I'll bring some of that into my lifestyle so I can become successful in my business. That's a contamination. It will certainly prevent one from developing spontaneous love and Godhead. But it needs to be eliminated. So in the language that Bhaktisiddhanta has used, he has placed in categories straw, grains of sand, and dust. He's also put weeds, but so he's called this a straw. Just it's filler. Inordinate economic development, just meditating too much on that, it's just disturbs. Then another is dust. So he's categorized dust as modernized material benefits. I was thinking this when I was going to visit some of the Potomac Temple. Spent some time with the devotees there. So when I got off the plane in Baltimore, practically instantly we're on this 4-lane expressway going both directions, and you know, down 95. And even before getting to I-95, there was this super highway. Wow! You know, go to India and expect something like that. Forget it. But I was thinking, are these people happy? They got their, just as Prabhupada said, they've got their highways and nice motor cars, but are they happy? Hey buddy, you happy? They're on their cell phone making business. Getting anxiety about what just happened. Or getting elated moment before the next thing happens that it crashes. They're not happy. So modernized material amenities don't make one happy, and feeling the necessity that I must have these things. This is the whole program of marketing in modern society. Just get people feeling they have to have those things to be happy. And anarjana vritti is not very good for the gross national product. Because it's training persons that such things are not only not necessary, but better to reduce them. And come to the point where you'd be very happy to be without them. In another category, he Bhaktisiddhanta identifies is, I'll read it, one who cannot give up the desire for fruitive activity is understood to be covered by the dust of material contamination. So this is a kind of very, very broad category. fruitive activity. So it doesn't just mean fruitive activity outside of devotional service. It may also mean within devotional service, importing fruitive activity tendencies into the realm of devotional service. So that's one of the dusts of material contamination. And we have to be aware that that tendency is there in the heart and to cleanse that tendency. Just go through some more of the inventory. Then there's grains of sand. And the grains of sand he's identified as impersonal speculation, monism, speculative knowledge, mystic yoga, and meditation are all compared to grains of sand. They simply cause irritation to the heart. No one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by such activities. Nor do we give the Lord a chance to sit in our heart peacefully. Rather, the Lord is simply disturbed by them. Prabhupada goes on. Rather, the Lord is simply disturbed. Sometimes yogis and gyanis in the beginning take to the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as a way to begin their various practices. I studied under such a so-called yogi for a little while till I realized what was going on. And it was a very effective ploy to attract young people, but it was also a ploy in terms of Krishna. The idea was to merge with Krishna by chanting Krishna's name. So the grain of sand spoiled everything, like sand in the sweet rice. Just the whole thing was, I left. I don't want this. So it's motivation combined with activity. We have to align our activities to be compatible with the purpose of devotional service. Devotional service means taking whatever it is that Krishna has given us, whatever capacity, facility, anything that is within our purview here, and see that it can be rendered favorably to Krishna. And then the motivation needs to be checked. Not for personal gain, not for self-aggrandizement, subtle or gross. And then he goes through some of these others, the subtle ones. Kutinati. He's defined it two different ways. Kutinati, in a very broad sense, means duplicity. So you do one thing that apparently has one nice purpose, but you also have another purpose or agenda. The duplicity. As an example, one may attempt to imitate Srila Haridas Thakur by living in a solitary place. One's real desire may be for name and fame. In other words, one thinks that the fools will accept one to be as good as Haridas Thakur because one lives in a solitary place and chants Hare Krishna. These are all material desires. A neophyte devotee is certain to be attacked by other material desires as well, women and money. In this way, the heart is again filled with dirty things and becomes harder and harder, like that of the materialist. Gradually, one desires to become a reputed devotee or an avatar. Yes, that's it. An avatar. So, if not checked, these tendencies, he gives a list of them. Because of time, won't go through the list. But the overall idea is that the heart is the temple. And our activities should be for cleansing the heart. And our external activities can very well be heart cleansing activities. I'll give an example, just like we sing every morning. The spiritual master is very pleased when he sees his devotee disciple is engaged in cleansing the temple. So this is one of the temple commander's favorite verses. Because, well, Prabhu, you know, when you clean the temple, you're cleansing your heart. So get out there, Prabhu, and make your heart really clean, okay? So it's true, though. Maybe manner of persuasion is not unmotivated. Calling out the name of the deity that they worship and spiritual master, and immediately fixing the mind like that, first thing. Then taking bath, making the body externally clean, putting on clean clothes. Then going to the altar, making some sound, waking the deity or announcing one's presence before the deity, or if you have pictures. And first thing, cleansing the altar. First thing, cleansing, then offering suitable prayers, and then performing one's japa. You describe like that. Cleansing of the altar, or cleansing the physical. So, for those who are in the Kanishtha Adhikari stage of devotion, beginning stage of devotion, Krishna is over there. He's on the altar. And so many other places Krishna isn't, but the Lord is in the place of worship. So in one's home, one can also make a place of worship, and that, at least that place, should be very, very sanctified. So a stage beyond that, Kanishtha Adhikari stage, is the Madhyama Adhikari stage, where through preaching activity, one's business is to awaken in one's own self and in others a deeper appreciation of the presence of Krishna there, and the need to make a little reconnaissance mission once again with Krishna, to go and bring our attention to Krishna once again. So the picture of where Krishna resides becomes a bit broader for one who's a preacher. But then that the business of doing things with a clean heart becomes essential. And here's how Prabhupada describes that. Well, by his practical activity, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informed us how to cleanse our hearts. Once the heart is cleansed, we should invite Lord Sri Krishna to sit down. And then we should have a festival. He describes and distribute prasad. And have kirtan. Says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to teach every devotee this by his personal behavior. Then he says, everyone who spreads the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepts a similar responsibility. Responsibility. We can't just go and preach, we have to be responsible. Well, but what is that responsibility? Make your heart clean. The Lord was personally chastising and praising individual devotees in the course of the cleansing, and those who are engaged as acharyas must learn from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu how to train devotees by personal example. Not just train devotees, but train by personal example. Responsibility. Our business as aspiring Madhyama Adhikaris is not only to preach, do the right activity, but do so with a pure heart, where we're teaching by our example, this is how you do it, this is how you make your heart clean, and show the clean heart through clean activity. And Prabhupada concludes the purport, this is called anartha nirvritti. cleansing the heart of all unwanted things. So, practically speaking, in our life as just concluding here, in our life as devotees, or practicing to become devotees of Krishna, it's not just the cleansing of the altar. The pujari cleanses the altar, and they do that on our behalf. And one brahmachari may cleanse the temple. I saw the cleaning chart upstairs for who's supposed to clean the hall and the bathrooms and the laundry room. So it's not just those physical acts of cleansing that make the heart clean. It's actually all of our interactions, and this is what I want to focus on in the next discussion, how through the associate, there's some effort that we have to make on our own. Krishna helps our effort, makes our heart clean. But there's something that, especially as preachers of the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're dependent upon the benedicting association that we get from other devotees. And we have to recognize that's a fact and how to perform our devotional service all the while, not just doing the right activities and refraining from the don'ts, but what will give us the impetus to carry on and do that without falling away is the joy that comes from making our heart pure, doing those activities with that consciousness. So that's our next discussion. I'm over time already, but we'll take some questions. You going to tell me I don't have time?
No.
Okay.
One of those you mentioned is a prudhu mentality.
Yeah.
What is that exactly mean by performing devotional service? How we can detect and be able to win?
I'm inspired because I'm getting a result.
Sometimes it's more subtle.
Sometimes it's more subtle. There's a beginning. That what depends on what result we want. Sometimes it's not so subtle. Sometimes it's the result I want is wealth. And I'll continue as long as it's very clear I personally will gain in my position of wealth. That's pretty gross, but that's there.
I mean, in the case of a devotee, he wants better for the Lord.
That's a devotee, but there's the contamination of heart that it's not just for the Lord. So for a devotee who's practicing innocently and properly, that isn't even a thought. But, you know, maybe a little alarm will ring one day and you'll recognize that that mentality is there for me, within the hearts of performance of devotional service to some degree. I'm happy as long as my situation... Now, Prabhupada writes quite the contrary in Nectar of Instruction, that his disciples have very little facility and they come from very good families, but they're happy to have just a little facility just so that they can render devotional service. And Prabhupada said that's a test that they're very sincere. But we may find someone not prepared for that little facility. I'll accept position in devotional service as long as this condition is met. But so that's part of fruitive mentality. There's other categories of fruitive mentality that are more subtle. That first one is labha, and then puja and pratishtha. We train that we should respect all living entities. We certainly should respect other devotees. But supposing the conditioned souls who we're associating with, who are trying to become devotees, you're the temple commander. Supposing they don't respect you or disrespect you, you could say, I quit. Who needs this grief? And my authority, they've told these knuckleheads, I mean devotees, to cooperate with the temple commander. It's a tough service, and we'll let you try it for a week if you don't believe it. So just cooperate. He's told them so many times, they don't cooperate, I quit. They don't respect me, I can't do my service. Yeah. Maybe not so extreme, but, you know, like that. Fruitive mentality. I'll continue. I want to serve Krishna, but I also want bhava, puja, and pratishtha. I want some gain. You know, something. You know, if these people that we're preaching to, they don't give any contributions, what's the use of preaching to them after all? that kind of thinking creeps in every now and then. Rather than, you know, just so it's nice, I know some preachers that they deliberately just go the other direction. Just, you know, thinking of the caring of the soul. And when that thinking is there, we'll only do what Krishna naturally makes the arrangement for, facility-wise. We're just going to carry on taking care of the souls of others. And with their souls, you know, the rest of the package, they have some psychological and physical requirements, so we'll do what we can according to the facility that Krishna provides. And that's the, so it's a whole other cultivation. Give you some idea. Yes. You must be Bhakti John, right?
We hear that we can actually cleanse the impurities from our heart when we develop a higher taste. But when we look at the process, the taste comes after the inartinivritti and steadiness.
Well, Krishna is the one who's we can get to the stage where our heart becomes cleansed by Krishna's mercy. Not just by, we make an effort, but it's Krishna's mercy. It's Krishna's cleansing. And Krishna also gives some encouragement. Even we may not be so cleansed, Krishna gives some reciprocation. He does that. He gives us some taste, kind of slips a little in. We're not qualified, but he gives us anyways. Opens the door a little bit, like Bunky Bihari temple. So that we can go on. Because otherwise, how can we go on? Even in the beginning stages, before we're qualified. Krishna helps us become qualified. But progressively, as we go further and further and further, it is based on our experience of that taste that gives us, I could say, confirmation and confidence to go further, make further efforts. It's a higher taste is there. It's not one, two, it's simultaneous.
Is the process of anarthanavritti, is it dependent on faith?
Yes. Sure.
And is it proportional or?
Yeah. Now Krishna certainly can give his mercy to those who don't have faith. But whether they'll receive it or not is another thing. But so let's take a very nice example is Rath Yatra, where, say, a public Rath Yatra, where persons don't know what's going on, etc. Do they get Lord Jagannath's mercy, the mercy of the holy name, prasad? There's definitely some cleansing, definitely some spiritual benefit that goes on. And that in itself, that activity in itself is the rendering of devotional service, but it's a jnata. Unknowingly, they've rendered some devotional service. That's just sheer mercy. Then that's to prepare one to voluntarily take up knowingly performed service. Just a qualifier to, is it dependent upon faith? To progress further, where one bhajan, you know, the connection between that soul and the mercy that comes through devotion, the devotee association, or the encountering devotional service, one will take it up oneself. Just make a comment on this. Understanding this particular point, that in the beginning stage one may have very, very little faith. So one of the things that's very important to do is to treat those who have very little faith, newcomers and beginners, very kindly. You know, but one of the problems with that is, well, two problems. It's hard to maintain that unless one's heart is soft. And the second problem is, if the person who is treated very kindly starts to repeat their, you know, association with devotees, and they get a little closer and they see you're very kind to outsiders, but you're not very kind to insiders, they go away. Because what's this? So actually, that soft-heartedness and kindness begins at home. We may have most wonderful philosophy and process and prasad and deity worship and kirtan, so many attractive things. But if our dealings with one another, and I understand this is Bhakti John's topic, if our dealings with one another are not what they should be, we're doing a great disservice to others and to ourselves by not attending to that. So, John?
You said that there is the process of cleansing one's heart, yes. So it means that the desire to enjoy the material nature is within the heart.
That's the unclean thing.
Yeah. So, but then how does the mind relate? Doesn't mind desire to enjoy it?
Yeah, the mind, here's a little detail of our Vedic understanding of things. The mind and the heart are connected. We normally think of the mind up here, but the Vedas think of the mind, describe the mind like synonymous with the heart. Yes. To answer your question. Yes. No?
No, there's so many things I would like to ask.
Something's stirring in there. Okay.
One question that I have is I've heard it described as a characteristic of a Nishkari Kari is that he thinks, I alone am serving Mary perfectly for my way of worshiping, my group is serving Mary perfectly, and others are no good. And that as one progresses, I guess it has this cleansing process that goes on more and more. The other extreme is that the Adhikar, he thinks everyone else is engaged in emotional service. Only I am not so much engaged.
So interpolating, you can then take it that the Madhyama Adhikari would be in a progressive track of understanding how others are also serving Krishna nicely.
Something like that. And also, I personally have a continuing problem where, you know, if I try to apply, say, some of the principles that came up in the class today, I tend to then see, oh, I have this rotten thing in my heart and that rotten thing in my heart and this desire for good activity. You know, and then become discouraged.
Yeah.
So how do we get that?
Okay. Well, I was planning to address that as a topic, but we can just touch on it now. The process, as this verse on the board indicates, the process of anartanavritti follows behind, not precedes hearing and chanting. In other words, as I'm hearing and chanting, as I'm cleaning the pot, as I'm engaged in the activity of scrubbing the dirt off the bottom of the pot, it's the scrubbing that brings out those other things, and I can go, yeah! But if I just put it under the water and keep scrubbing, the process itself will take care of the unwanted things. Let me focus on the process. Hearing and chanting, pleasing Krishna through this hearing and chanting, from that primary focus, following behind that is, whoops, here's some other things besides that one motivation and that one activity. There are these two divisions, the activity itself and the motivation behind the activity. So as I'm, it's not just that I want to please Krishna by making this pot clean. I've got other agendas. I like my pots nice. Or I want a pat on the back from the temple commander because I did a good job. Good going, Prabhu. Yeah, that's what I want. There's other things going on. Subtly, and I grossly, and you know, I have some other ideas besides what. So, but my the focus should go. Yes, it's what you said is true. Those I've had plenty of experience with this. When speaking on the topic of anartanavritti, there is a tendency to, in some, or at least maybe all of us from time to time, to just get anartanavritti conscious instead of Krishna conscious. That's not the idea. The idea is to become Krishna conscious through hearing and chanting. And in the process of, because as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees were engaged in cleansing the temple, they were chanting. I didn't read that section, but they're non-stop chanting, and it's joyful and cleansing. Haribo! And they're gathering in Haribo, dust and dirt and sand and straw and Haribo, keep going. And pile it outside. Why? Because they want to make the place nice for Lord Jagannath. Their business is not, oh, how disgusting. The person who was supposed to clean this before me just didn't do their job. I'm going to tell the temple commander. I always knew that they weren't very good devotees. Anyway, it's kutinati. That's not our business. Our business is making our heart pure. And it's unavoidable in the course of making the heart pure. Other things are going to be dislodged from the heart, and there they go, Hari Bol. Let me focus on the on Krishna. Otherwise we can get depressed. This lump of coal for our heart, how can I cleanse it? Useless. Okay, so we'll end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.